Good evening. It's Thursday night, April 16th, 2020, and this is Ozarks at Large on your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Ahead tonight, making sure veterans have access to health care during the pandemic. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich explains how the VA is staying in touch with patients. And in our second half hour tonight, Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda investigates how Pea Ridge basketball teams stay in playing shape virtually. On tomorrow's Science Friday, conversations with people who study and experience climate grief and an examination of our collective emotional and psychological response to COVID-19. Science Friday begins tomorrow afternoon at 1, right after our noon edition of Ozarks at Large. Governor Asa Hutchinson is reporting a smaller number of new COVID-19 cases in Arkansas the past 24 hours, fewer than the previous few days. At his afternoon press briefing, the governor reported 51 new cases between midday Wednesday and midday today. He says he's pleased with the apparent declining state of confirmed cases, but says he expects the numbers will still bounce up and down.
There will be spikes from time to time because we will be investigating a hot spot or a potential outbreak. The cases might go up, but it's been really right on the trajectory that we expect and that we are pleased with that trajectory that we're on right now.
The governor says he was scheduled to talk with the White House and other governors today about what happens after the spike in cases around the country. Tomorrow, the governor plans to meet with a board of medical advisors headed by Arkansas's Secretary of Health, Dr. Nate Smith, to consider Arkansas's eventual emergence out of the height of the pandemic. Dr. Smith says there are encouraging numbers, but there is no need to be premature with dissolving precautions in place now.
It's way too early to do a victory lap, but it looks like we should start planning ahead for when we are after the peak. And the governor has set up a committee to look at our post-peak response, and I wanted to let Arkansans know that we're looking at these things very carefully. I've gotten a number of emails, and people say, well, you know, how much longer do we need to do this or that? And I'm really proud of the way Arkansans have followed the guidance and the directives and really flattened our curve. We are looking at how quickly and how safely we can start to peel back some of these directives.
Mike Preston, Arkansas Secretary of Commerce, says a new website, arunemployment.com, is now set up to provide more information about unemployment claims in the state. He says the unemployment hotline in Arkansas will be working on Saturdays beginning this weekend.
We're now able to operate 6 days a week starting at 6 a.m. So if we have additional folks answering the phones, trying to handle and process all those calls that are coming in. So we have been going from about, 8:30 to about 3:30. We've extended that from 6 a.m. to 4 p.m. We still have folks who will be working many hours after that because after they answer all those calls, we have to process all that information.
The press briefings are archived at Governor Asa Hutchinson's YouTube page. This is Ozarks at Large. Ever since the shortages of personal protective equipment and specialized machines like ventilators became apparent, makers and small manufacturers have been jumping in to help fill the gaps created by the coronavirus outbreak. Designs have been created in a matter of days, then shared around the world so others can use and improve them. And small manufacturers have shifted their operations, donating their time and materials to quickly turn those designs into physical objects. As Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek tells us, all of this is happening locally too.
That's the sound of a 3D printer making a headband that will be used to hold a clear acrylic visor. Vincent Edwards, an instructor at the University of Arkansas who runs the Advanced Technology 3D Labs at the School of Art, says the two pieces will be assembled into a face shield for local healthcare workers and first responders.
Essentially, it has kind of an inner headband and then an outer band that actually holds the visor so that it gives it an adequate amount of space in front of the person's face so that they can still wear a mask, a medical mask or an N95 mask.
Edwards says the shields are another barrier between a patient and a healthcare worker who might be wearing one of the precious few N95 masks available to them.
One of the issues that we're having here in Arkansas and across the country is that there's a shortage of masks. So when those masks get contaminated, they would either need to be sterilized or disposed of. And so these face shields are, one, protecting the doctors from droplets that would hit their face and not the mask, but also it's helping them to wear masks longer.
The design of the face shield that's being used by Edwards comes from a European company called Prusa Research. He was able to download their open source file and reproduce it in his lab, which has been empty of students ever since the U of A moved all of its instruction online.
That was kind of my initial thought was, I have a lot of tools here. I wonder if there's something I can do to help.
While Prusa's headband design was ready for printing, Edwards says it wasn't possible to jump straight into making the plastic visor component of the face shield. The entire world is in need of medical-grade masks, so it's becoming harder to source standard PETG plastic, like the one Edwards would ordinarily use for the visors.
Myself, along with Angie Carpenter from Architecture and a handful of other people regionally, have been working to find a different plastic film that would still work really well for that face shield that doesn't pull it away from the standard medical mask market that's trying to also ramp up production at the same time.
He says they settled on a transparency film for overhead projectors that comes in long, wide rolls.
And it's a little bit thinner. We treat it a little bit more disposably than we might the thicker stuff, but it's been approved by several doctors and hospitals here locally already. So that's what we're moving forward with for now.
Edwards can produce between a dozen and 20 face shields a day, but he says if you include the loose network of other face shield makers like Modus Architects, Marlin Blackwell and Associates, and the U of A Architecture School, that number jumps to nearly 500.
So it was really cool to see how well suited this approach and this network was to dealing with this problem quickly.
Meanwhile, in Rogers, a CNC router at the Roark Group is busy cutting acrylic sheets into parts that will be assembled into what's become known as an aerosol box. The coordination and funding for the project are being spearheaded by Dayton Castleman, the director of visual thinking at Resource Design, an architecture and design firm that's also located in Rogers.
Well, what I'm doing is a result of the fact that I was only a week into my new job when all this started going down. And I was specifically being creative and trying to figure out, what am I going to do? You know, what work am I going to do?
While he hasn't been there long, Castleman knew his company had resources that could be marshaled into action. So he says he started by calling his doctor to find out whether he knew what local hospitals were lacking.
He was formerly at Mercy, and I knew he had some contacts there. So he connected me with Dr. Jason McKinney and shared a link to an article in the Taiwan Times, I believe, about a doctor who had created this four-sided clear acrylic box with two holes in it.
Castleman says the idea appealed to him because of the simplicity of the design and the materials used to make it.
It was just profoundly practical. It put another sort of space of protection around the patient while doctors are working on the patient.
While it's not considered medical-grade personal protective equipment, Castleman says the box is another measure of protection for healthcare workers as they perform intubations, which is the process of putting someone on a ventilator.
Apparently, it's a process that can create a lot of aerosolized particles coming from the patient, and it's particularly hazardous moment in that process, which is a fairly common one with patients that are starting to have pulmonary distress because of COVID-19.
The Roark Group has donated its time to fabricating the boxes, and while they've made more than 80 so far, Castleman says he started with one prototype, made by Joel Gordon, who is the making and tinkering manager at the Scott Family Amazium.
So I made the first one, took to Mercy Hospital. They looked at it, and the way that you would with any prototype with a customer, they sort of evaluated it and said, we'd like it if it was a little wider, if the holes were a little higher, if this were a little this way. So as they were describing all the changes that they wanted made over the phone, I was literally making those changes in my computer.
After that, Gordon shared the vetted design as an open source file. And while Castleman ran with the project on a local level, the file went viral. Gordon says the aerosol box wasn't his idea, but the file he created could be quickly plugged into a computer anywhere in the world and turned into a physical object a lot of people could use.
I started getting contacted by people. So I talked to Michigan University. I talked to people at Cedars-Sinai, folks in Oregon, lots of, about eight different states I know. I couldn't name all the hospitals. And then I had a call with a hospital in Dublin, Ireland. I had a hospital in France contact me.
Gordon's name, by the way, was brought up by every person we spoke with for this story. Before becoming the Amazium's making and tinkering manager, Gordon was the co-founder and executive director of the Arkansas Regional Innovation Hub, the first makerspace in Arkansas. He's also the Arkansas representative in the Nation of Makers, a national coalition of organizations that strive to support the maker community. Gordon says that makes him good at connecting the dots.
I know a lot of dots.
One of those connections has been Dr. Jason McKinney, the director of critical care at Mercy Hospital in Northwest Arkansas. McKinney specializes in pulmonology and is part of a group of doctors treating COVID-19 patients.
I don't anticipate that our area will ever be as hit as hard as some of the more densely populated urban areas such as New York and New Orleans. However, we do expect the numbers to increase. But again, given our population population style and kind of our geography here, the rate at which and the timing of which that's going to happen is a little bit difficult to predict.
Although the number of hospitalizations from COVID-19 has been low in the region compared to some other parts of the country, the symptoms of the virus are similar to other diseases. So McKinney says hospital staff have to presume a patient is positive until proven otherwise.
We have had a lot of patients admitted to our COVID unit, in which we've had to presumptively treat as positive, in that we're isolating ourselves, we're having to go through all the protocols that we would go through, even if they were positive. And so our use of protective equipment has gone up substantially, and we can't back down one little bit and risk infecting ourselves and other patients.
Which is why he says he's welcomed collaborations with local makers who are willing to manufacture additional protective equipment. Once McKinney connected with Dayton Castleman and Joel Gordon on the aerosol box, Mercy had 25 modified versions of it within a couple of weeks.
So we've been able to send boxes to, we have three separate emergency rooms. So between our emergency rooms, our operating rooms, our intensive care unit where we take care of these patients, as well as our feeder hospitals out in the outlying areas such as Berryville and other places, we've been able to furnish them with all these boxes to make sure that we're able to protect as many of our fellow providers as we can.
According to Castleman, Mercy will receive another 25 aerosol boxes. And just like the others, they'll come at no cost to the hospital. More than a dozen have also gone to Arkansas Children's in Northwest Arkansas and Little Rock. And two more were delivered to Conway Regional Medical Center this week. Turner Willis, the ACO of Northwest Medical Center in Bentonville, says they've also been on the receiving end of locally made protective equipment, including some of the face shields you heard about at the start of this story.
From the get-go, I think across the nation, we have seen an incredible response from our makers, our tinkerers, and our creative groups. And definitely up here in Northwest Arkansas, we're very lucky and blessed to have a group that's actively engaged in trying to figure out how they can help.
Northwest Medical hasn't been working on prototypes with any makers, but Willis says they've been paying attention to the equipment that's being successfully used in other places.
So like your New Yorks and your Louisianas of the world, a lot of the prototypes and different things are going there. And so then we're saying, okay, this is a true product that, people can use and will will work sufficiently. And so we can say, hey, yeah, let's, you know, we've seen this in different areas, let's roll it out.
And although the outcome of the pandemic is far from certain, Willis says the outbreak undoubtedly connected people who otherwise would have been strangers, which has led to all sorts of innovative problem solving.
And so I don't want to say we're MacGyvering protective equipment, but, you know, there's definitely some component of that where we're being very creative and finding solutions very rapidly.
Joel Gordon says that ability to respond quickly and creatively means makers and small fabricators are just as important as large manufacturers that have the capacity to produce millions of something but are only now able to answer the federal government's call to address the PPE and medical equipment shortages.
Efficiency dictates that you make one thing and you tool up to make that one thing. And everything in that factory is designed to make the one thing. But when you go to those big manufacturers and you say, I want you to stop making cars and I want you to start making ventilators, it's a little like turning a freight train around.
And Gordon says that takes a lot of both time and money. So the stopgap for the shortages has been individual makers and small manufacturers who galvanize their resources in a matter of days to meet the needs of their regional healthcare systems.
At the end of the day, what I'm hoping will happen is that we'll all sort of step back, you know, after all of this is said and done, and appreciate the fact that small manufacturing and individual makers really made the difference.
Gordon also hopes it leads to more and better funded maker spaces across the country. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Susanna Sitek.
The aerosol box project, which is being run by Dayton Castleman, is funding part of its operations through donations. Castleman says donations can be made through the Rogers Experimental House, which he helped found. You can also find out more about the project and receive updates on the progress on Facebook by searching Aerosol Box Project Northwest Arkansas.
Support for KUAF comes from the Walmart Museum on the Square in downtown Bentonville. The museum is temporarily closed. However, a virtual tour is available 24 hours a day at walmartmuseum.com.
The Veterans Healthcare System of the Ozarks in Fayetteville is taking precautionary measures to protect veterans as the coronavirus pandemic continues. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich recently talked with Kelvin Parks, the medical center's director, about how he and his staff are responding.
According to the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, as of April 15th, over 4,400 veterans have tested positive for COVID-19, including 18 patients in Central Arkansas. 272 veterans have died. The Veterans Healthcare System of the Ozarks, VHSO for short, which operates under the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, is on call to help veterans during the COVID-19 pandemic, says Director Kelvin Parks.
Yes, in fact, as our nation continues to respond to the COVID-19 coronavirus public health emergency, my message to the veterans, the family members, caregivers, and all of the listeners is that to know that the Veterans Healthcare System of the Ozarks, in partnership with our local community hospitals, we stand ready to face the challenges in the days and weeks ahead as this surge moves in our direction. The realities are we're facing an unprecedented time. And it's required our healthcare system to make swift and deliberate changes to protect the health and well-being of our heroes that we serve in Arkansas, Missouri, and Oklahoma, and the professional staff that deliver that care.
The coronavirus case count in Arkansas is expected to peak later this month, according to the Arkansas Department of Health, but Park says VHSO has been preparing early on.
We developed plans and took actions to ensure our system, our healthcare system, was stood up to continue to meet the healthcare needs of our patients. And this included conducting mandatory screenings, restricting visitors, and transitioning to face-to-face appointments through virtual appointments.
Parks is urging any veteran who's experiencing coronavirus symptoms, including a fever, dry cough, shortness of breath, or chest pressure, to immediately contact VHSO by phone, not in person, or their local ER.
Clinical staff are available to provide 24/7 virtual care and support, including nurse advice and triage. This service is also available at no cost to the veterans enrolled in the VA healthcare system.
VHSO is not testing for COVID-19, but medical staff can swab patients who present with symptoms.
We then send those results out to Palo Alto, and we also have a contract with the local LabCorp and Quest, and our returns are averaging around 3 to 5 days.
The Veterans Healthcare System of the Ozarks, he says, remains open for primary care, but is prioritizing coronavirus care at this time. Park says all veterans are being asked to contact the VA first before showing up in person.
1-800-691-8387, and that's the result of the social distancing. So what we've done is we've developed, we've encouraging our veterans to use video and telephone appointments, and so we're aggressively moving towards virtual care, which is designed to help our providers to deliver that high quality care to our veterans during this COVID-19 crisis. So we do that by using video and telephone appointments to connect with patients during the pandemic. Veterans can arrange a video visit through a VA Video Connect app. They may conduct appointments via telephones. And providers now are also able to use such modems as FaceTime, Skype, Facebook Messenger, video chat, and Google Hangout to reach our veterans.
To arrange for a telephone or video appointment, enrolled veterans are being asked to send their provider a secure message via My Health eVet by visiting myhealth.va.gov. Park says access to prescription medicine is also assured during the pandemic.
Absolutely. Veterans can request prescription refill orders and ship medications to their homes using My Health eVet or prescription refill mobile app. VHSO, we've also set up a drive-through pharmacy at our Fayetteville campus, and the hours of operations are Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Veterans should pull up to the awning by Building 1. We have stalls 1, 2, and 3, and a pharmacy staff member will greet them at their vehicle with their prescriptions.
VHSO is also advising vets to use what's called Annie's Coronavirus Precautions, which dispatches automated text messages with information about COVID-19.
Annie is a mobile app, a short message service text messaging capability that promotes self-care for veterans enrolled in VA healthcare. Veterans using Annie receives automated prompts to monitor and track their health and educational messages. The coronavirus precaution protocol sends information to veterans and can monitor for symptoms. Providers can assist the isolation and quarantine protocols to patients in isolation or quarantine due to the COVID-19 using this Annie app also.
VHSO continues to accommodate non-urgent health questions via its secure messaging system found online at My Health eVet. One word.
And that's a function that's always been in place where veterans have the opportunity to talk directly with their providers through a portal.
Park says, along with the main campus in Fayetteville, VHSO's community-based outpatient clinics remain open.
So we have 7 community-based outpatient clinics, and all 7 of those clinics are open and seeing patients, same protocols, where we ask our veterans to call before they come, and because of social distancing, we are triaging each veteran prior to their appointments, and we're meeting their needs using those telemodalities that we discussed.
VHSO medical staff are also taking strict measures to protect themselves from exposure to the virus, he says, by using personal protective equipment, with some working at home if able.
But as far as the administration, if you're asking directly about my leadership team, we're here at the hospital 7 days a week, preparing our healthcare system for this coming weeks of the surge.
Veterans can source a coronavirus fact sheet at fayetteville.va.gov. And for more information about VHSO's connected care technologies, visit connectedcare.va.gov. We'll post these links to our news page with this report on OzarksAtLarge.com. I'm Jacqueline Froelich reporting.
Yesterday, the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs announced it was distributing over 7,400 digital devices with support of Facebook to veterans, their caregivers, and families to reduce isolation and improve social connectedness at home. Ahead on Ozarks, the high school basketball season in Arkansas ended prematurely, but for Pea Ridge players and coaches, the shutdown is no reason to not practice to get better. We have that story and take the temperature on Arkansas businesses as we approach unemployment numbers not seen since the Great Depression. That's in this week's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal report with Paul Gatling. Tomorrow, on a Friday edition of Ozarks at Large, Michael Tilley with Talk Business and Politics will be with us to talk about reduced traffic on the Arkansas River and what that means for the greater economy as a whole. Plus, how do dermatologists work during a pandemic when we're social distancing? That and much more on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 on 91.3 KUAF.
Time now for another edition of the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. I'm Paul Gatling. Glad to be with you. Coming up today, we will hear from the chief executive of the State Chamber of Commerce, who will discuss the business impacts in Arkansas caused by the coronavirus pandemic. Randy Zook sat down with Roby Brock for an exclusive interview. We begin today, though, with an update from co-working giant WeWork. In April last year, you may recall, the global company based in New York announced its plans to make a multi-million dollar investment in Bentonville by building a large office and mixed-use building. Those plans took a big step forward Monday when the company's Bentonville development partner officially filed a development plan with the city. The site, as has been known from the beginning, is a 1.5-acre lot at 224 South Main Street. That's just a couple of blocks south of the downtown square. The size of the building is 228,000 square feet. Those were about the only details released Monday from Bentonville developer Josh Kiles, who owns the land for the proposed development and is partnering with WeWork on the project. Kiles said in a statement, quote, "It is the decision of the owners, developers, and marketing team to only disclose the large-scale plans at this time when so many of our friends and loved ones are being adversely affected by COVID-19. We look forward to better days when we can truly celebrate this development and share plans, renderings, and details with the community. Until that time, we have no further information to provide." The statement said the building should be completed in early 2022. The total investment for the project has not been disclosed. Ahead on the program, a conversation with Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce CEO Randy Zook. That is after the break on this edition of the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report.
Support for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report is provided by the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. ArkansasStateChamber.com. First Security is proud to be only in Arkansas, and it shows in your banking experience. They offer smart solutions for personal and business banking, plus convenient services and community investment. First Security. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender.
The most apparent hit to the economy during the COVID-19 pandemic is the quick closures of indoor gatherings for restaurants, hotels, and other businesses in the hospitality industry, said Randy Zook. He is the CEO of the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. He expects the healthcare industry to be the next sector with major pains. In a recent interview with Talk Business and Politics Editor-in-Chief Roby Brock, Zook examined areas that he believes are taking the brunt of the economic damage while the coronavirus pandemic continues to grip the state.
I think the most obvious and the most painful is in anything related to hospitality, tourism, anything that has to do with restaurants, hotels, transportation, the airline industry, everything that has to do with travel and hospitality and leisure. The casinos, hot springs, Eureka Springs, I mean, just all those areas, this is their beginning their season. and they're just clobbered. That's all there is to it.
It just ground to a halt, too.
Well, it literally is. I mean, there's just no customers. Hotels are closed. So it's pretty brutal in that sector. Now, there are other sectors where it's, you know, the pain is not as deep or as or hasn't really occurred yet. And you go across the state, across the economy, other sectors. Manufacturing is holding up, mm-hmm. especially our food processing, knock wood. Chicken plants, poultry processing plants, food production plants like Conagra and Russellville and all of the plants.
Some of the essential things that we
definitely need. The essential things that they just have to get to the store.
Does it surprise you? I think you could probably explain this as well as anybody, that healthcare is struggling too, despite the pressures that are being put on the healthcare system. We need more healthcare workers in this pandemic, but at the same time, the hospitals are struggling. Explain to people why it would seem like hospitals should not be struggling at this time.
It really is a paradox, or it seems that way, but if you look at it, it makes sense. Number one, all elective procedures, all kinds of, you know, yeah, I can wait a while sort of decisions about surgeries and treatment are ended. There's just nobody at the hospitals because everybody thinks that the hospitals are full of COVID-19 patients, which is absolutely wrong. So there are literally layoffs occurring in hospitals. Yep. And there's also this crazy thing I learned about yesterday. New York is paying sort of a bounty for especially RNs and respiratory therapists. You can go to New York as an RN, I almost hesitate to relate this, but and in 3 weeks, they'll pay you $20,000 a week, and then you hole up and quarantine up there for 2 weeks after the three-week stint, and you walk away with $60,000+. That's a year's earnings for an RN. Mm-hmm. So there are all these perverse outcomes and sort of upside-down things going on. But the bottom line is many of our hospitals in Arkansas are really struggling right now, and it's it needs attention, and it will get attention from the feds.
Congress has done a lot through the CARES package, and they've done some things preliminarily as well. They're talking about doing other things. From what has been done so far, would you say Congress has done a good job or a bad job on this?
I think Congress has done an outstanding job. And look, kudos to the Fed. If anybody is going to pull us through this, it's going to be the Federal Reserve. They have just basically guaranteed the debt of the United States and every element in it, municipal bonds, junk bonds, corporate bonds. It's just amazing. And all the Treasury issues like their notes and bills and all that. So the Fed gets high marks, the Congress gets high marks, but my hat's off to Jerome Powell. We may start naming streets after him right after Governor Hutchinson.
You've obviously been hearing from a lot of business leaders, mm-hmm. small and large, across the state. What do you think still needs to be done to address some situations for some particular employers and businesses? What maybe is still out there on the horizon that would be helpful that really either Congress hasn't done or something's going to have to happen just through pure economics to make sure that there's a change?
Right. Well, we're starting to think at the chamber level and across the state about what comes next and how do we begin to get the economy back into gear. One thing that Congress is going to have to do, and likely will, is a big infrastructure bill. The president's already started talking. He's thrown out a number of $2 trillion. That would go a long way to kick-starting the economy because there are lots of things that need to be done all the way from highways to bridges to broadband access to tunnels to airports, the air traffic control system. There are lots of things that need to be and should be done that could be done with it.
And that's Randy Zook. He's the CEO of the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. There is much more of that interview with Roby Brock at talkbusiness.net. They spoke on Sunday's edition of Talk Business and Politics, and you can watch that program each Sunday morning at 10:30 on KFSM TV Channel 5. A couple of other headlines from earlier in the week. Fayetteville die casting company Pace Industries filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy due to the coronavirus. In a statement, CEO Scott Bull said the pandemic has affected a number of the company's programs and initiatives aimed at the automotive industry, which has been hit hard by the virus. That has in turn weakened demand, disrupted the company's supply chain, and forced the temporary closure of several PACE Industries plants in the U.S. The company expects to complete the reorganization process in the next couple of months. We've also got some reporting on how the construction industry is reacting to the coronavirus. Effects of the pandemic being felt nationally are by and large not being felt in Arkansas, according to several construction executives. You can read more about those stories and others online. Just head on over to nwabusinessjournal.com. And that's our time today for this edition of the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. Until next time, I'm Paul Gatling. Thanks for listening.
This is Ozarks at Large. The Arkansas Activities Association canceled all spring sports due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Before that, the AAA had canceled all remaining state championship basketball games. Boys and girls teams who qualified for the finals in Class 3A, 4A, 5A, and 6A will all be named 2020 state basketball champions. With in-person classes suspended for the rest of the school year, coaches like Keith Neal, head girls basketball coach for Pea Ridge, are finding ways to continue coaching players virtually during the offseason. Last week, Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda organized a Zoom meeting with Coach Neal and two Black Hawk athletes, incoming senior Josie Goldberg and incoming freshman Leah Telgemeier, to find out how they're adapting to staying in shape while practicing social distancing.
It took a lot of work, took a lot of man hours. We ended up building a YouTube account, creating a bunch of videos that breaks down every drill. That way our coaches weren't bombarded with a ton of, hey, coach, how do you do this? Because when you can't demonstrate hands-on, it's really hard. So we had to try to think two steps ahead because we have a lot of our kids that, you know, if they want to get it right all the time, and it's hard because when they can't have that interaction with us on a daily face-to-face, you know, sometimes that's frustrating for our kids. Like that, like my little junior high girl right here, she doesn't ever want to mess up. She wants to do it right all the time. So when she can't have that one-on-one interaction with her coach to make sure she is doing it correctly, it's a little bit frustrating for some of our kids. And so we tried to think ahead. We tried to make sure we had a lot of demonstrations. We tried to break them into small groups. So these two kids are group leaders. So not only do they get to work hand in hand with their coaches, but they get to be leaders of a couple other kids as well in their group. So they can help demonstrate the proper way to do it if there's any questions that come about.
In your smaller groups, are you guys getting together and practicing on video so you can see what your teammates are doing?
I've more of just been like checking in with them and like asking them how their work has gone and like if they like needed help with anything over like Snapchat or like text messages.
Okay. What about you, Leah?
Probably the same thing, just checking in and asking if they have any questions.
And Coach, I know that you have found an app that you demonstrated on Twitter the other day. Tell me more about that. That was really interesting.
Yeah, I came across a resource on social media. It was an app called Home Court that the company, since of COVID-19, has allowed people to use full access of the app until, I believe, April 30th. I'm not sure what it's going to cost after that or what they're going to take away in their apps, but I tried it with my daughter in the garage, and it was a lot of fun. It was just basic skill development, but one of our blocks of our off-season program is competitive drills. And when you're not in practice, it's hard to compete with your teammates when your teammates aren't next to you. And so this was a virtual way that we can kind of have something that can track and score, and it takes all the humanness out of it because you can't budge a score. You can't mess up a score that's scoring it for you. And so it's fun. It's been really fun watching our kids. A lot of our junior high kids have really taken off with this because they'll see somebody score. It's kind of like a Twitter deal, and you can see the feed. And so like when Leah does her dribbling drill, well, everybody on her team can see that Leah's video and what she scored. So the next kid, Josie's trying to beat that score. And so the competitiveness comes out, and it's been a good resource. Anytime you try something new, there's always that uncertainty. But this has been a really good resource so far.
Leah and Josie, have you gotten to try it yet? Do you like it? Can you tell me what you think about it?
Yeah, I got to try it the other day, and you have to like set it up, trying to get the angle for your whole like body to be in it was kind of difficult. But once you get that, you just like click start, and then it's really fun to use.
How does it work? So you set up your phone or so that you can see yourself?
Yeah. You have to like stand in like this like box and make sure you're like within the box. And then once you're in that, you basically just like hit start and then like counts down, and then you just like dribble and like try to hit the targets.
Have you guys been surprised at how quickly you've been able to adapt to this new way of practicing?
I don't know. I guess it's been pretty easy because like I haven't really had anything to do. So
you guys have school online now as well. So are you doing that in the morning and then this in the afternoon, or what does your day look like?
I'm just getting it done in the morning.
Some days I kind of mix it up. Like I'll do like some of my schoolwork and then I'll go do some of my workout and then just switch it off.
And Coach, what about you? It's been a pretty quick turnaround. You've adapted very, very quickly. Is this something that has been in the back of your mind for, if there was an ice storm or something and you couldn't get in, or is this just something you've come up with in the last, I guess, month at this point?
No, this has been something that we, as a staff, has had to put together. And anytime you do something new, you want it to be as good as it can, but we've had to come back and kind of make some tweaks. To say that I was prepared for this, it would be a lie. We were definitely not prepared for anything virtual. However, being humbled with all this stuff, and our coaching staff would agree, is that there's a lot of good things that have come out of this, because I've been able to extend this down even farther than just our high school and junior high teams. I'm able to get into our youth club organization and send out a lot of our videos to our youth club. And so there's some positivities there where we've really been out to outreach younger grades and get our stuff out to even those younger kids. And that way they can do some of the same drills that our junior high kids have been doing and what our high school kids are doing. So there's been some positives to it. And I think that, you know, I don't expect this to be the norm forever, but I think that we will be able to utilize this as year to year goes on and really bridge the gap from our youth club organizations a lot better than even what we have right now.
And Josie and Leah, this is definitely a very strange way to end the school year, kind of abruptly and at home. How are you feeling about the situation overall, not just with basketball, but with school and maybe not getting to see your friends like you normally would in April and May?
I mean, I have sisters, like three sisters at home. So I still get to like interact with like other people, but kind of sucks. Cause like, I'm like, I just want to like go hang out with my friends and like go chill, and you can't do that. So it's kind of sucking, but I can still like go outside and enjoy the nature. So
what about you, Leah?
It's been like kind of hard because you don't really have anything to do, but I think it's just given us a new perspective on that things can change really quickly.
Have you been able to video chat with your teammates like as a whole?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you doing that pretty regularly?
So my junior high coach has been able to meet with his team. I think so far he's done that once, Leah, since spring break. Is that correct?
Twice
he's had a full team meeting, and then I've had one team meeting virtually just this last week. But we have a weekly team meeting with our team leaders in off season. So like Josie's mine, and so we have a high school team meeting for their leader. Like we had it yesterday, and then Coach Kenny had his team leader meeting yesterday with his kids. And so we're just really trying to, you know, it's so frustrating because like we see these kids on a daily. I mean, Josie down here eats lunch with me every single day. And so those are the things that, you know, beyond basketball that you miss. And so I see Leah every single day in practice, and and those personal relationships that you build while you're in the same room is a lot different than you do right here. And so I think it challenges people in general to that reach out and call people rather than text, and video conference rather than text. And so there's a little bit more human nature aspect to it that us as society gets back to. And so like Leah said, it's very humbling.
So we've talked a bit about some of the challenges and some of the things that you miss, but what are some of the things that you're looking forward to if hopefully things go back to normal, say for the school in the fall?
For me, I'm just ready to get back and seeing my kiddos. Like, it's my second family. I mean, and they know that. It's hard to function. I mean, I love my family with all my heart, but I have another family out there that I see every day, and probably sometimes more in season than I do see my own kid. And when you take that away from somebody just abruptly, there's definitely an emptiness there. And so I'm just ready to get back to normalcy. I think there's going to be a re-sense of motivation for all of our kids, maybe not just in basketball, but life in general, just because, again, like Leah said, you never know when life happens and you lose something. It's like all these seniors right now that don't get to finish their senior year out, athletes, period, that don't get to finish their spring sport or didn't even have a spring sport. And then you get on the collegiate level and there's so many things that are impacted. But, you know, I think I'm just excited just to get back to everyday normal life and having that personal one-on-one relationship with people.
Well, so I'm also in like club volleyball. And so it's weird because like I'm generally like doing something every single day. And so just to not have like that connection with other people and like be doing something I love every day. But I'm still trying to do that, but just not having it kind of is hard to do.
Leah?
Just being back to normal and being able to go out in places.
Now, Coach, were you able to finish your season this year?
You know, it's crazy. Like, our high school team finished in the Elite Eight. We had a really successful year. It's the first time our team has been in the state tournament in over 11 years. Yeah, we were really proud of them. And so we kind of made it to that step. We were two games away from being in the finals. One of our conference teams got all the way down to the finals. And the day before they were supposed to play their game got canceled because of COVID-19. And so they lost their state title opportunity the day before. And so luckily AAA announced, I think it was 2 days ago, that they had co-champions. And I honestly think that they got it right. They got it right by doing that. I think, you know, as coaches, we didn't get in the business for high dollars or fortune or fame. We really got in the business for kids. And I think AAA did the right thing for kids.
That was Heath Neal, head girls basketball coach for Pea Ridge, and two Blackhawk basketball players, Josie Goldberg and Leah Telgemeier. They spoke over Zoom with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda last week. More information about Pea Ridge School District sports available at pridgeathletics.com.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Baldwin. Contributors to this Thursday night edition of the show included Susanna Sitek, Antoinette Grajeda, and Jacqueline Froelich. Timothy Dennis mastered our show. The Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report with Paul Gatling is part of our partnership with Talk Business and Politics. You can read more at talkbusiness.net. Thanks for additional content provided by KUAR, our friends in public radio in Little Rock and Central Arkansas, that took place during our noon broadcast. Speaking of noon broadcast, we will be back with you tomorrow at noon and 7 for a Friday edition of Ozarks at Large. You can always listen to us as a podcast. You can subscribe for free through locations like Google Play, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and more. All right, from my living room on Mount Sequoia, for this Thursday night edition, I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for being with us. Please be well. We will talk to you again tomorrow.